journal trip ever taken in the Bible was during that, when Moses came down from the mountain. He went up to the mountain, talked to God, and God wrote his commandments. And then Moses came back. I just can't tell if I'm broadcasting or not. Moses, then when he came back down and saw the children of Israel worshiping a golden calf, he dashed the commandments to pieces. So the longest trip in the Bible was when Pearl Moses, if any of you have ever been chewed out by your balls, you'll understand. Moses had to walk back up the mountain and say unto the Lord, when the Lord asked him, did you deliver those commandments to my people? Moses had to say, no, I broke them. You got another copy? And as I say, if you've ever been looked forward to being chewed out by your boss, you will understand that that was about the longest trip in the Bible, when he went up and had to tell Jehovah now that he had broken up all his commandments. But Jehovah already knew what had happened, and the Lord invented a sense of humor, so I think he had one. So he said to Moses, you broke my commandments. And Moses said, yes, sir. He said, you broke all of them at one time. And Moses said, yes, sir. And I think the Lord just said, you really don't do things halfway, do you? Now, last week I talked about the fact that I wish someone would tell me I'm on. Anyway, that's why I'm so hesitant here. It's hard to talk when you don't know if you're on or not. But last week I was talking about the simple fact that what people call a living constitution is actually a dictatorship. In other words, you either have a constitution, which means what it said in the first place, or you have one person telling you what to do. Now, as I said before, the reason my show is called The Untrained Eye is because of a remark made by a Britisher, the head of the Flat Earth Society, which has existed for many, many years. And the American ambassador had him over after the American satellites in the 1960s had circled the Earth and taken pictures of the Earth. And the ambassador thought it'd be funny if he called over the head of the British Flat Earth Society to look at the pictures. And that gentleman, with a typical dry English wit, took a look at those pictures and then said, you know, it is amazing how, to the untrained eye, the Earth looks round. Yes, to the untrained eye, the Earth looks pretty well like it is. That's why I call this the untrained eye. So when somebody talks about racism, they never talk about the alternative to racism. And I'm going to talk about the other, the alternative to racism, which I call wordism. Wordism is the belief that the truth is in a book or in an opinion. We live by the dictates of judges, and somehow we feel that that is justice. Ah, I got something. I hear you fine. The button don't matter. That's the kind of language I like, see? Okay, this makes things much better. Now, if you're going to put together a society, it can be put together one of two ways. And there are only two ways. One is, you can base it on kinship or race, or you can base it on some kind of final truth, some kind of word. This can be, as in the Muslim world, it's the word of Islam and the Quran as interpreted by the imams. And that's very important because the person who does the interpreting becomes the Quran. Same thing is true of Allah. When judges interpret the Constitution, they are the Constitution. So when the president takes an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States, what he is saying is, I will uphold and defend the opinion of five justices of the United States Supreme Court. Now, in other words, those five are dictators because the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. So the president and the Congress are not in the same league. It's not three branches of government. There's only one ruling branch of government. That's the judges. They are the Constitution. They hand down decisions. When the Civil Rights Bill of 1964 said no quotas, no racial quotas, no preferences, and so forth, the courts just overruled it. Congress doesn't matter. The Congress said whatever the court wants them to have said. So, you can put, today, essentially, we have the opinion of the Supreme Court as our ruling law. We don't have a constitution. We have five people. Let me make a general point here. What I am saying is, a country is either based on kinship or it is based on the word. Now, the problem with the word is that there are three words that are very critical that are always left out. In my opinion. So, when I used to work routinely with Calvinists who were hard Calvinists, absolutely committed to the idea that the Catholics that I worked with were all going straight to hell. I worked with Catholics who were equally convinced that all of the Calvinists were going to hell, and they told each other so. And I worked with hardcore atheists, the objectivists of Ayn Rand. And they thought everybody else was silly, while the other two would think that they were going straight to hell. So people are always, I deal with hardcore people who don't mince any words. But the problem is, I often hear people say, well, God has made these laws. This is in the name of God. Problem is, you leave out three words. When you say, this is what God says, what you're saying is, this is what, in my opinion, God says. It doesn't matter if you're in a uniform or a robe or you're shouting from a pulpit or dictating from Ayn Rand's writings. What you are giving is your opinion. That's wordism. The trouble with wordism is, if you try to unite a nation or a people on the basis of words, any words, you are uniting them on the basis of your opinion. So there are two ways to unite people. One is kinship. The other is your opinion. There's racism in the broadest sense of the word. I mean, anything that anything you believe about kinship is called racism today. Or you can have someone's opinion. Now, where someone's opinion rules, the person who gives the opinion is called a dictator. So wordism is dictatorship of one sort or another. You can call it the Constitution, you can call it the Koran, you can call it objectivism, libertarianism, but whatever you call it, you're being ruled by opinion. And that's what people forget. They say, well, we don't want to limit our society to a bunch of white people. We want a universal philosophy. The only problem with that is that they are only, like, depending on how you define it, four or five races. There are about 100,000 universal philosophies. There's nothing less universal than a universal philosophy. So when someone says that they have a universal philosophy, they are splitting the world up into a lot smaller bits than someone who is a racist in the broadest sense of that word. The United States was originally set up as what could be called a racist state. It's interesting, down here in Columbia, South Carolina, a black student wrote a paper on how good it was that America was founded by a bunch of like-minded white males, because they could not have set the country up in any other way. They had to be like-minded. Now, until the Civil War, the United States itself assumed that this was a white country. That was what the Dred Scott decision was really all about. It is book thick. In fact, it's the 1857 Dred Scott decision is known for allowing slavery to expand westward. But basically, it was all about America being set up as a white country. That's the fact of the matter. At the time of then came the Civil War, and Lincoln declared that the United States was a propositional state. In other words, we are based entirely on a set of words. And he had the words. As I say, wordism is extremely dangerous, because if you unite people on the basis of some words, which are your opinion, then what you have done, then what happens to the people who don't agree with your words? Well, as in the case of racists, what happens is that you're going to have to suppress the ones who don't agree. Now, if you have a state set up on the basis of race, you don't have to do that, which is what this black student said. You can set up a state and allow different opinions. But if you have a wordist country, then you can't have dissenting opinions, because dissent is treason. Now, let's see if I can get some complicated ideas straight here. The United States originally was set up as an extension of the Indo-European racial movement, though we didn't know about it at the time the Constitution was written. But it became the white man's country, and that way ideas were free, could be free, because the country wasn't based on some particular opinion. It was based on the fact that we were all kin, and therefore that opinions were free. Now, what happens is that wordism, I think, is a disease that grows on almost any philosophy. It goes from telling the simple truth to interpreting the simple truth, and suddenly somebody in a robe, like a judge, begins to be the truth. And that person becomes a dictator. Personal persons. For example, in the United States, the Constitution begins, with one authority from which it derives all its power, and one objective. That objective is that power is we, the people of the United States of America, and our posterity. We, the people of the United States of America, are the only basis that the Constitution says that it derives its power. On the other hand, it says the only goal of the United States Constitution, the only goal is to preserve freedom and so forth for ourselves and our posterity. And what is almost a joke is that that document is the one the Supreme Court says it allows the Supreme Court to reverse referenda, local decisions, congressional legislation, presidential actions, all on the basis of we the people, meaning five justices of the Supreme Court. This is a bad joke. But everybody accepts it because nobody goes back and looks at it. For example, the court says that illegal aliens or undocumented workers have the same rights as we the people of the United States and our descendants. Certainly you couldn't read the Constitution and say that, but the Supreme Court really doesn't have to, because it is the Constitution now. So wordism, if we start using the word, means unification on the basis of opinions. Because, and I repeat, no matter how many robes you're wearing, the simple fact of the matter is that if you're giving, that all you can give anybody is your opinion. Disraeli once took a woman to see Parliament, some lady something, and she said, "Well, all I heard was a bunch of opinions." And he said, "Madam, opinion rules the world," which is very true. But what happens is, after a while, people begin to worship the book itself and the logic behind the book is lost. Now, I'll give you an example. Yiddish is a German, very simple German dialect that Jews spoke in the ghettos. It is old German. In fact, when I learned Afrikaans, which is very simple Old Dutch, I was rather surprised to find that I could understand Yiddish if it were spoken slowly, because it's Afrikaans is an Old Dutch. But Yiddish is written in the Hebrew script. The reason that it's written in the Hebrew script is the same reason that Persian languages, Urdu, and are written in Arabic script, because countries which were taken over by the Muslims became required that whatever script they used before had to be changed to Arabic script, because the Quran was written in Arabic. Jews require that their languages be written in Hebrew script. This shows that you're a Jew. When the conquistadores reached South America and they saw all these things written by the Indians, they destroyed them because they were in the wrong script, not Christians' script. So what happens is you begin to, it gets a little weird. Wordism gets a little weird right quick. You are essentially worrying about the script, and you're taking it that seriously. There, in the West, we called it Christian civilization, and there's still a lot of confusion. By the way, this word racism, wordism, I've been using for a long time. My whole job is to plant ideas, and I would keep talking about it. And about 10 years ago or less, National Review suddenly started asking whether America was a propositional state. Now, propositional means the same thing I mean by wordist. Is America a country set up on a proposition, as Lincoln said, on the proposition that all men are created equal, or is America a bloodline? National Review has never answered it, but after I kept bringing it up, they found it got around to them, and they used the term propositional state, that America is just a proposition, which is the same thing as it's just words. Wordism tends to want a wordist institution, because here's another thing. Wordism, like everything else, evolves. One church fights another church. One heresy fights another heresy until the orthodoxy wins out. And if you have a true wordist like the Reverend Moon, he wanted intermarriage of the races, his universalist church. The reason he wanted intermarriage, and this is not unusual, is because if a person of one race and completely different culture marries someone else, a completely different race and culture, in his church, and the only thing those two people have in common is his church. So a wordist institution tends to want people's only relationship to each other to be the wordist philosophy that rules. So wordism does tend, as in the case of Islam, when it came over North Africa was largely white when Islam first arrived. But with harems and this philosophy, they became very brown. And today, in the mountains of North Carolina, where half my family comes from, which is all white, it was all white, but now the evangelicals are up there, not the good ones, they're up there trying to get third world children adopted, and they're very successful. In Hendersonville, North Carolina, the whole building devoted to that, because they're universalists, you see. They want these families to only be united by the philosophy, the interpretation, the opinion of their church. So wordism becomes an enemy of kinship. When Alexander the Great was conquering Asia, one thing he wanted to do, believe this or not, was to get he wanted everybody to be united under him, and only under him. He even wanted to take plants from Greece and put them in the east, and plants from the east and put them in the west. He wanted intermarriage. This sounds a bit nutty, but wordism always sounds a little nutty. And an institution, a wordist institution, is very happy when it can cross, when it can ignore culture and all that, and unite people only under that institution. I hope you understand what I'm talking about here. But once again, wordism, the alternative to kinship or racism, no one has ever talked about, that I've ever heard, has ever talked about the problems with that. Now, they talk about Hitler killed 6 million Jews. Well, there's a wordist philosophy based on the prophet Karl Marx, and the low count for how many people communism killed in the last century is about 100 million. But nobody classes that as wordism. But if you talk about kinship, they immediately say Hitler, 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 Hitler. It is very necessary that we start using this word wordism in order to put together institutions like Stalin's Russia, Mao Zedong's China, Pol Pot's Cambodia, the Inquisition, the Counter-Inquisition, the massive slaughters and tortures that have gone on under the name of some kind of final word, wordism. Wordist institutions are like a cancer. I keep reading the simple words of Jesus, and I cannot imagine the kind of thing that people who call themselves Christians have built on it. For example, Jesus said to his disciples, there are those, I'm not direct quote, but there are those who say that he who is not for me is against me. And he said to his disciples, we are not of that kind. In other words, if you are not a friend, you're an enemy. And Christ said, that's wrong. However, if you quoted that, if you said those same words in a Calvinist state in the 16th century, or a Catholic state in the 16th century, you'd probably be burned at the stake. Because someone who is not a friend of the ruling opinion, that is to say the ruling faith, they call it, but actually it's the ruling opinion on the faith, was an enemy. So what Jesus said doesn't really make any difference to those people. This is what wordism does. It takes what Jesus said and builds an institution on top of it. It grows. It's very much like weeds or cancer. And that is what wordism is. Confucius always said that he was nothing but a philosopher. They built a religion on Confucianism over there. They build institutions. People build institutions on just about anything. And those institutions are exactly what gets in the way. For example, in a class in college, a professor is sitting there talking to his students. He sort of presents the ideal world he would create as opposed to the nasty old world outside. Essentially, he ends up saying, if I rule the world, we would have this nice, objective world where things would go well, and you see what a mess the world out there is. And the students come out believing that stuff, and that's why they get so warped. Once again, his opinion, not tested, just his words. You know, one special thing about Western society is that we are the first society in all of history where a test, if you can prove something, you can knock every expert out of the way. It's not that easy, but it's possible. No other society in history would have allowed an experiment to overrule an authority. But if you can prove it, you will be believed. The basis of Western science is that one experiment is worth 100 expert opinions. But in every society prior to this one, authority was everything. And I think partly because we have been that we have developed this because our society, despite all the inquisitions and everything, our society continued to be built on homogeneity. That we were all white, same race, same, and so opinion was not our only unifying force. When America's ancestors came over to America, they fought the Indians, they enslaved the blacks. Actually, the blacks enslaved the blacks. No white man ever made a slave out of a black man. The blacks were captured by other blacks, sold to New England traders. The traders would then bring them to the South. So really, in the line of slavery, the Southerners were the third group. Let's see if I got off my point there. All right, let's get back to this thing about opinions. So a nation must only be built on one of two things. A nation is not built on the Bible. It is built on, or the Koran, it is built on your opinion of the Koran, or the Bible, or the Constitution. A wordist institution claims A. That, unlike a racist institution or country, it is universal. To repeat, there are about a million universal truths around. So, some of them, if you look in the almanac, it's kind of funny to see all of the different churches, each one of which is true, and that's just churches. Every one of them claims to be universal. So, if you base what you say on a universal philosophy, you're splitting the world up into some very tiny and very nasty parts. That's wordism. What I was talking about a while ago with the Arabic and the Hebrew letters. Whatever country became Islamic had to switch to the letters that were used in the Quran. To be Jewish, something has to be in this script, because inevitably, wordism leads to a worship of the word. Now, this is definitely a worship of a script, which is nuts. And what we need to do is to start going into this alternative to racism, which is anti-freedom. It cannot allow freedom of speech. It allows, in fact, wordism is always a dictatorship. So whenever someone wants to talk about racism, which by which they really mean just any form of kinship, basing a society on kinship, we need to talk about wordism. In World War II, the British Empire, it's an empire, was based on their particular form of wordism, British law. America had descended from Lincoln. After the Civil War, it became no longer a kinship nation. It became a propositional nation, where a universalist nation. Russia and our hero, Uncle Joe Stalin, the organizer of victory, and the hero of the greatest generation, of course, had his own wordism going. And in peacetime, he managed to kill more people than Hitler ever managed to kill in wartime with his particular form of wordism. But the nice thing about calling all this wordism is that it makes it very clear that the so-called alternative to racism, alternative to universal brotherhood, is very vicious and is the key to slavery. Wordism regards anyone who does not subscribe to those words as a traitor. So they say, anyone is welcome in our church. Anyone is welcome in our country. Not quite. Anyone who agrees with our opinion is welcome in our church. Anyone who agrees with our opinion is welcome in our country. There's nothing universal about that. It calls itself universal. Anybody, after all, they say, can believe whatever he needs to believe. So we end up with the United States, which is very curious. People are always talking about loyalty. Now, one thing I say to people when they talk about loyalty to the United States that really sets them off, I'll say, well, I am as loyal to your country as you are to my race. This really sets them off, because I am supposed to be loyal to the United States. The problem is, I am supposed to be loyal to anything the Supreme Court calls the United States. Now, when the Constitution that we originally agreed on changes completely because five members of the Supreme Court, your tummy doesn't feel good that day, all of a sudden that is the United States. I'm supposed to be loyal to. I remember I said one time, the United States is a melting pot. A melting pot, by definition, is nothing specific. That's what a melting pot is. It's nothing specific. I said, anybody who is deeply loyal to nothing specific is in desperate need of a psychiatrist. I am not very interested in being loyal to nothing specific. I am not loyal to the Supreme Court. I am loyal to we, the people of the United States of America, as stated in 1789. This is racist, and their posterity, by the way, immigrants since the time the Constitution was written, become Americans. But they become Americans because that is good. They were allowed to become citizens because we needed immigrants. We needed good immigrants. And so they became part of the people with the permission of the people who came before. They were good for German immigrants, Irish immigrants. They were good for we, the people of the United States of America. But that's why they were allowed here. Not because they have as much right as we do to be here at that time, or we had, now they do, but because we needed those immigrants. We needed hard-working, hard-drinking Irishmen. We needed Germans. We needed all these nationalities and groups. After the Civil War, we started this idea that America is a nation of immigrants. Now, when you say we are a nation of immigrants, you're saying that I have no more right to be here than any resident of India. You've thrown away your birthright. You have said anyone who subscribes to the set of words on which, and they love to say, that's what America is all about. Not mine. Not my America. When somebody says that an illegal immigrant is really an undocumented worker, he is saying something really vicious. He is saying the difference between me, the person who was born in this country and whose family has been here for going on 400 years now, has no more right. I have no more right to be here than anybody in China, India, Somalia, whatever. The only difference between me and them is I have documents, because what I call illegal immigrants are now undocumented workers. The difference between me and them is the document. Do you realize what you're saying when you say that? Who issues documents? Bureaucrats give you documents. The courts rule on documents. So what you're saying is that the only difference, the only right you have to live in the United States and work here. Now, this is literally true. When you say undocumented workers, you're saying your only right as a person born in this country or as a legal immigrant who naturalized in this country and working, your only right depends on, once again, the opinion of bureaucrats and the opinion of courts. You have no rights at all. And that is what you're saying when you say undocumented workers. The difference between you and anybody else on earth is nothing but the opinion of the bureaucrat. So when you say this is a nation of immigrants, first of all, you just throw away your birthright. When you say undocumented workers, you have subjected yourself to the opinion of a bunch of bureaucrats. And if you say the Constitution of the United States, what you're talking about is now you're talking about the opinion of five justices of the Supreme Court. When you agree with someone that you believe in universal this, that, and the other, you're signing on with just about the nastiest people in human history. So, I think that the greatest generation, as it calls itself, when they signed on to the idea that America is a nation of immigrants, they began the destruction of America, which we are trying to prevent. So wordism grows of itself. It is essentially a cancer. And it is nothing but opinion. To repeat, opinion is dictatorship. I'm going to take a look at Stormfront here and see if anybody is dealing with me. You hit the F5. By the way, I came up with another line. I guess when you've been through the struggle for all these years, you either have a sense of humor or you end up doing your laughing in the crazy house. But I was talking about, let's see here. Oh, another thing I wanted to say here. Respectable conservatives agree, never question the word racist. As I say, National Review, perforce, because I kept talking to people they knew and so forth, did use the word propositional, but they never have decided that America is just a set of opinions. They just bring it up because it keeps coming up. But if you do plant this idea that the alternative to what they call racism is wordism, and you really go into wordism and how sick it is, you might find it's a pretty good counterargument, and it's a very important point. The definition, by the way, and off to the side, because I was just talking about respectable conservatives never go into the point. That's why they become respectable conservatives. I said that before. It's not a plot, but the media essentially, as you have probably noticed, puts forward people like Hannity or O'Reilly or some other numbskull, sort of wimp numbskull, as their, quote, opposition, unquote. And I was thinking, I used to work in a retarded home, and I was thinking about the definition of retarded, mental retardation. There are three categories of mental retardation. And I like to say this, moron, imbecile, and idiot. These are legal terms, not medical terms. A moron is by law a person with an IQ between 50 and 70. An imbecile is a person with a tested IQ between 30 and 50. An idiot is a person with an IQ between 0 and 30. These are acceptable terms in court. So I say, according to the law, a moron with an IQ between 50 and 70 has the dumbest moron with an IQ of 50 has almost twice the intelligence of the smartest idiot. So it is untrue that there is no difference between respectable conservatives and liberals. There is a difference, as I say in my book, Why Johnny Can't Think, America's Professor Priesthood, in readbob.com. Readbob.com, that's where you get it. I have said that, and I demonstrate in the book, that a liberal reaches a maximum mental age of 6, and a respectable conservative reaches a mental age of 10. So I'm not entirely joking there. Now, a lot of times I will tell people that I'm an overeducated redneck from Pontiac, South Carolina. This relates to the whole subject of wordism. A lot of people think that to be educated, you have to have an educated attitude. Down through the years, the book, knowledge of the book, makes you're supposed to subscribe to the book. In this case, the educated attitude subscribes to the liberal idea that professors should rule the world. But to me, the word is an instrument. You see, people get books and they begin to worship the books. They begin to think that the truth is in the book. To me, a book is an instrument. It's a tool. If you ever did welding back in my day, you use a welder and a cutter. But if you hand somebody a cutter, you don't say, now you have to have a cutter attitude. They'd think you'd lost your mind. So a real education does not give you an educated attitude. I'm still the same person I was. I have these instruments. I can read. I know a lot of history. I know a lot of science. But this does not change me. But today, in a university, you are supposed to you're supposed to change when you go to the university. You're supposed to get an educated attitude, which means you're supposed to say the same words that everybody else with a college education says, or you're not educated. It's not. Education is not considered just a tool that you use. You learned a lot of stuff. It's supposed to make you conform to the words of your professor. You're supposed to come out with uniform thoughts. As the president of George Washington University said, when the students graduate, they move the little tassel on their mortar boards on top of their heads from left to right, from right to left. He said, at the university, your political opinions should go the same way. Well, mine didn't. I have an untrained eye. The university is there to train your eye, to teach you to see the world through a wordist lens, their words, their opinions. That's what education is supposed to consist of. But education is just an instrument. I used to say, before I went to college and I was in Pontiac, I said, I don't know nothing. When I finished college, I said, I do know nothing. And that's about the big change there. A nation based on kinship and not opinion can allow free expression of ideas, because that you're not a traitor if you have different ideas. A melting pot can only be united by some kind of dictatorship. It has to be united by opinion. Well, and remember, a dictatorship is just an opinion that is enforced. An opinion, as I said once, the law is opinion with teeth. A wordist state is only united by an opinion. Therefore, you cannot have a free opinion in what they call a universalist or an idealist state, or whatever you want to call it. A country based on a, quote, ideal, unquote, is based on an opinion. And that is something no one else has brought out. You either have some version of kinship, racism, or your entire nation is based on someone's opinion. And someone's opinion that is enforced has another name, a dictatorship. Let me now go to the F5, by the way. You can save yourself a lot of trouble if you want to refresh a page on the computer. There's F1, F2, F3, F4, F5, right through F12. F5, you just hit it, and it will refresh. Then you don't have to look for the little icon or whatever. Let me go over here and see if anybody has any comments or wants to cuss me out or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Going up here, the untrained eye. Let's see. All right. They were talking about Tehran. Here is Northwest Lady. She tells me that she gives the link, and someone who reads my box says again. Okay. So David Fellows tells me I can hear you loud and clear. He doesn't say whether what I'm saying makes sense or not, but I appreciate that, because it might not. Let's see. Something that I asked SOS Out West to remind me of, but he's not specific enough, and I can't look that up right quick. Yes, he says there's no such thing as left or right. Less and less today, is there, as David Duke keeps saying. Less and less. Yes, and Unconditioned Canuck asked me whether I addressed the question of how Christianity sanctifies racialism. I answered him on that one at some length on Stormfront. Let me see. I know there was a good point, SOS Out West. But I really can't remember the point that I want him to remind me to make. So, here we are at 6:57 p.m. I've been talking for over an hour. It has been 2 weeks since I was on, because last Saturday was the New Orleans Convention. And so my entire fan club has been missing me terribly. And I hope he is listening. So it's pushing 7 o'clock. Let me F5 again and see if anybody has any questions. And if they don't, ding dong, I wish I could remember this point. But Christianity, once again, does Christianity sanctify racism, or does as Hannity says, one of the morons who gets chosen because he's so harmless by the liberals as a conservative spokesman, and when he gets on the TV, everybody, he gets this huge fan club. I want to remind you, Hannity was the one who stated flatly that Jesus Christ died on the cross for interracial dating. That's nutcase stuff, gang. O'Reilly has said over and over, it's not like he just said it and popped off, he keeps emphasizing it, that the government has to pay for, has to sponsor interracial dances because the founding fathers called this the United States of America. I'm quoting O'Reilly, I'm quoting what O'Reilly said over and over and over again. Now, someone who says things like that is really does need psychiatric care, but nobody will remind him of it. So, you know, some of this wordism thing really gets nutty, and has to, because what you're justifying, as I say, the things you're justifying, for example, the only difference, the only reason you have a right to live in the United States is because the bureaucrats and, of course, the courts allow you to have some documents. Now, the untrained eye, again, I have the untrained eye here. That looks nuts. That's insane. But nobody puts it that way. Because if you put it that way, you're not going to get Hannity's job. You're going to embarrass liberals. You're going to laugh them off the stage. So wordism is a very vicious cancer, and apparently, and as far as I can tell, it is the only basis of a country besides kinship. Between racism, kinship, whatever you're going to call it, and this cancer called wordism, I think I'll take the racial side. Well, that's all I got to say for today, and whoever's listening, hey, y'all be good.